Ever since then, you guys have been really faithful in supporting us financially, and I know with prayers as well. I think some of you have been in contact through email while we've been abroad, and that sense of working together is just huge for us. There can be a little bit of a tendency in the church to separate what's going on domestically and what's going on internationally, and so as kind of we're out there and thinking about you guys and receive communication from you, and as you're here, you know, thinking about us, it really is a huge deal. That relationship is just so, it's so sweet, and it's so nice to be back to see some of you, actually, well, all of you, but some of you I've known a little more than others over the years, so it's really cool. I'm happy to be back. It's good for us to be back at this point, and maybe I could just talk a bit about what we've done, and then we have a bit of time here, so I'll just share a little bit of what we've been through for the past couple of years, maybe share some brief stories, hey, and I would love to give some time for questions as well. You know, what we've been through is probably a little bit confusing to lots of people, and like, what have we even done? Is like, we went far, far away. So any questions you have, I'm really happy to answer, because I want you to get a sense of what's going on. We want this time to be a benefit for you as well. It's not about Phoebe and Mark, the great missionaries. It's about, you know, the great missionary God who loves all the nations, including America, and you guys are involved in his mission here. So we're on part, you know, this is something we're all doing together. We were over there, you guys are here. There's a wholeness to it though. So anyway, we went out 2 years ago, just about. We flew from Boston to England, spent some time with my family in England for two weeks. Then we flew from England out to Dubai, which is in the UAE. I'm not sure, so that's in the Arabian Peninsula. Yeah. So those of you who are more educated than me in terms of geography will know that's there. So just across the way from Iran, it's in the Arabian Peninsula. So we flew out to Dubai, and then we went across the border into Oman, and we stayed in Oman for about 6 months. And we were in a smaller rural town where the culture was not very diverse. It was a very Arabian culture, so very traditional in that sense. And we studied there for about 3 months. For our 6 month time, we studied in a school for about 3 months. We studied Arabic through textbooks and learning and meeting people on the street and talking and building relationships that way. After 6 months, we moved across the border back into the UAE. Actually, it was just a couple of miles, but it was a different country. And then we stayed in the UAE for 1 year. And then we moved back to New Hampshire mid-December. So basically what we felt God speak to us about before we went, and as we were there as well, was we wanted to build relationship with locals. We wanted to share the gospel, but we felt God spoke to us specifically about building relationship and getting to know them, Arabs, Omanis or Emiratis, getting to know them, trying to understand their worldview. What is it that they see as important in their culture? Because what we felt God spoke to us about was that the gospel was going to penetrate through their culture. We weren't going to import Western culture there. We weren't going to try and bring in parts of our culture that weren't actually kingdom focused. We wanted to understand how they thought about things, how they viewed the world, and see which parts dovetail into the gospel, see which parts of their culture actually glorify Jesus. Because there's parts of the Arabian culture, in we say Khaliji culture, which are really godly. And the Bible is a Middle Eastern book. So there's parts of actually the way they do life naturally that really dovetail quite well into what we believe in terms of value and family, in terms of hospitality. What we wanted to do is we wanted to try and get to know people, you know, using Arabic, of course, and understand, get a sense of how they view the world so that we could see where the gospel could come and see what entrance points there are for the gospel. But I think I'm really getting ahead of myself, because at the end of the day, Arabic is just a really difficult language. and is very different from English. So when you make the jump from English to Arabic, it's a big jump because the language is structured very differently. So really, we actually just spent most of the year and a half just trying to get our heads around this language, and we're not done. It's for people who are trying to learn Arabic from the English, kind of from a language which is structured like English. Making that jump is a really difficult jump. It takes probably, I don't know, 7 years, 10 years, something like that. So we're only beginning our journey. So I'm just kind of talking here, which I'm fine with. But if any.
Are you teaching the children Arabic as they're growing up? So that'll be like.
That's a great question. We I think at this point, I'm happy to talk till the cows come home. But if you have any questions, if anything I'm saying is stirring a question within you, just raise your hand because I'd rather answer your question than keep on talking. So thank you. So the way we were learning language was... Welcome. The way we wanted to learn language was... It's basically the way kids learn language. So they spent a lot of Phoebe's language time was with a Syrian lady. And that Syrian lady was also looking after our kids while we were in class. So the Syrian lady's kids don't speak a lick of English. She just had a daughter, but she doesn't speak any English. So the amazing thing was Gideon was learning Arabic as a baby, as we learn English, which was actually an amazing privilege to kind of see that happen. Because we were, as adults, you know, we have a certain idea of what we think it means to learn language. You know, very, I'm going to study this word, I'm going to repeat it, and I'm going to try and... It's a very kind of brainy approach. But for him, he was just walking around and picking up words like you and I picked up mummy or daddy in English, you know, the first time. So, yeah, I mean, they really have an opportunity. You know, they're younger. Phoebe and I, if, you know... We feel like God keeps on calling us to this path to be there, to live there. We can get quite far with Arabic, but I'm 30, and there are certain realities about how far I can go. Those guys, however, they have an opportunity to really soak it in and be essentially native speakers, which in terms of the gospel is just amazing because they can inhabit. You know, we pray that they will come to know Jesus and be believers, and if they were believers and also in that culture, that represents an amazing opportunity to see the kingdom come, to see the Spirit be poured out in their lives. And so yeah, they Gideon learned some. It's kind of on the back burner now for him because we used Arabic a bit in the house, just like maybe short phrases here and there, so it's not quite the environment that it was for learning Arabic, but it's in there. Yeah, so yeah, that was really cool. Yes.
Talia was essentially not saying any words in English or Arabic by the time you left, but I think she does understand some Arabic, as she understands some English too.
So, do Bibles exist in the native tongue?
Yeah.
I guess Arabic would be a general term, but is there a specific language to like the UAE?
Yeah, yeah.
Different than Arabic?
So, there is. I mean, because, okay, if we were to look at the Middle East, just as a general, if those of you can see this. Oh, someone who's learned maybe could help me with that. I can reach, but I don't know where to pull. Okay, perfect. Look at that. Oh, it has actually. It has enough. So we were down here, but this part of here, there's quite a strong Christian presence. You know, in Jordan, in Syria, in Lebanon, we call this area the Levant. There's quite a few Orthodox believers there. So, you know, they would have Arabic Bible. Where we were, there's really no believers. So, I mean, there's different...
No native.
Yeah, no native. Yeah. There are expats who've gone there for work, some expats who've gone there intentionally to share the gospel. But
you said you moved back to the UAE. Why? Yeah. Even though it was just a few miles.
Yeah, that's a good question. We encountered some visa issues where while we were in Oman. We were on tourist visas, which means we had to leave and come back. We had to leave the country and come back every 30 days. 30 days. We were studying at an Arabic school at the time. We thought they could get us student visas, which would allow us a legitimate presence in the the country, you know, allow us to register a car. Lots of things I kind of take for granted about being, well, as an American citizen now. You know, you have a car, you're able to move around, you have legitimacy. Well, you need legitimacy wherever you're going. You need a way to get into the country. You need to be able to rent a house. You need to be able to have a car. And these things are often attached to what visa you have. So we had a tourist visa, and by God's grace, we were able to get things like cars and other things through various means that God provided. Although usually you would only get those things if you weren't on a tourist visa. But anyway, God was faithful. We were able to kind of make a way for the brief time. But anyway, a decent visa did not come through. A student visa did not come through for us at the school. So we felt it was right to move across. I had a work opportunity come up, which was more of just an opportunity to take a work visa, but still continue to learn language, as we knew God has spoken to us about that. So we took that opportunity, moved across the UAE, continued learning our language, and we were able to legally have a car, able to legally rent an apartment, because we had a platform, which was the visa. So Arabic is, just go back to something you mentioned, Paul. Arabic is really interesting because the scriptures exist, the Bible exists, but where we were, there was no local believers. It's just incomprehensible that someone would actually want to become a believer or become a Christian, however you really want to call it, because they're very happy as, most of them are very happy as Muslims. I mean, to be quite frank, the government does very well for them, helps them a lot. They have the way they view the world. And there's no real reason for them to convert. So it's probably technically illegal for them to do it, but that's almost a side note. Why would you want to do it? Why would you want to convert? Because their life is, as far as they're concerned, is fine. Which kind of was one of the reasons we wanted to build a relationship with them, so we could get to know them. So hopefully the Holy Spirit could kind of speak through us. Not that we wanted to hit them over the head with a book and say, hey, your life actually sucks, but just that, you know, like God might rise up in them as we were talking to them, just a sense that there was more, or that, you know, the paradigms through which they view the world are not quite accurate. I don't know how the Spirit would do it. Thankfully, I don't need to know how the Spirit works. He just works. Arabic is interesting because there's almost a separate language that they use for spiritual purposes. Not unlike maybe the King James Bible, how you wouldn't usually speak using that language, but maybe even more so with Arabic. So the language of the Quran and the language that the Arabs use to talk about spiritual things is almost a separate language. And that's one of the reasons why it takes so long to learn Arabic, is because it's just absolutely huge. Yes, Diane.
I remember when you were talking to the students, like the question of having kids in as a missionary, it came up several times. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah,
yeah. The kids were just like, they didn't understand why you would bring your children.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you explain, maybe tell us a little bit about what it was like to have your children with you? And you didn't have Talia there, did you?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, can you just, do
you have something to say to that?
Well, I think maybe the advantage is that we weren't really parents that much here, so it was all new to us. I mean, we had Gideon, but he was still really young. But the birth process was a little interesting because we were living in Oman at the time, and I had her in a hospital in the UAE, so it was a little scary to be across the border to get to the hospital. And then
were you
also,
in labor?
Huh?
Were you in labor?
Yeah. Yeah, when I was in labor. And then, actually, I think the more tricky part was getting her back home after, because we didn't have a passport for her yet. But actually, I found it quite difficult coming back to America and raising kids here, because over there, you have lots of help. The families are very close-knit, so if you're involved in a family, they're very supportive of one another. And my family is close, but everyone kind of has their own thing that they're doing. And we see each other for events, but they live together, really. They have compounds where there's, you know, a house for the matriarch and the patriarch, and then their kids, their sons actually live with them, their married sons, and their unmarried, all their unmarried children, of course. And then when their daughters get married, they go and live with their husbands. But, yeah, there's a lot of, there's also a lot more help in the home. They have hired help and things like that. So I think, practically speaking, it felt a little bit easier, actually, to have children over there. And there's just more of a culture of including kids in things, too. kind of the evening event that they usually do is go to the park. Everyone goes to the park in the evening. And they, because it's hot during the day, so they go at night and the kids run around and play on the playground, and the adults sit and drink tea and coffee. And, yeah, there's much more of a communal environment there, that component to the culture. There are a lot of things that I felt were difficult also because I couldn't wrap my head around how they do it. So, for example, with their sleeping, you know, they take their kids out to the park, and they might go at 10 o'clock at night. They go 10 o'clock at night, and they are there for, you know, hours. And I just would say, how do you do that with your kids? Because during the week, they have to get up for school at a normal time, and how do they stay up that late on the weekend? My kids melt down, and I couldn't wrap my head around it, but they have just different ways of living, and I think they just kind of maybe catnap throughout the day or something. I don't really know. It's a mystery to me. So there are things like that that, because of my Western upbringing, I don't really know how to integrate in the ways that they do things. So, yeah, there are things like that that I wrestled with and kept asking, what do you do? What do you do? They were like, I don't think they really understood that there was an alternative way. So they couldn't really explain it to me because they didn't know what they were doing. They were just doing it. So, your observation.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you folks are doing now.
Yeah.
Sort of what your plans are.
Yeah. So we came back mid-December because we needed a time of refreshment, to be honest. We came back mid-December. So we've been spending lots of time with, the folks from our church, New Frontiers Church in Portsmouth. And that's been really good. That's been really great. We've found God has just kind of refreshed us. We went through some really difficult relational things while we were out there with some believers that we were with as well. And that really kind of left us, I don't know, we were in kind of a bad way. We're coming out of that now. Praise God. He's kind of refreshing us and, you know, speaking about his love again to us and reminding us of his grace and his compassion and his kindness and things like that. So we're finding him refreshing us, and slowly we're, you know, able to get our heads back up again and think about, you know, what he has for us. We do believe he's spoken to us about being there. So, yeah, honestly, I can't tell you, to be honest. I think long term, I think in the short to medium term, we'll probably be back out there again, but I'll probably be working. But we're seeking God, to be honest. We don't know when that would be. We don't know where it would be. We believe he's spoken to us about being there, but at the same time, we have to, we're kind of coming to grips with some of the ways of thinking about our faith that, well, I speak personally, that have not been very helpful. Some driven tendencies, tendency to be quite driven or maybe not quite able to receive the grace of God and let that filter through my life as I've needed to. You know, sometimes I put myself under the law and find that I just become so dry. So we're kind of working through some things that God really needs to settle us down on in order so that we can be there, be over there and be sustainable, because it's not good if we're there and we become worn out. It's not good if we're there, you know, as Christians, but ourselves are dry, because the thing that's needed in that part of the world and in any part of the world is for Christians to overflow with the Spirit, overflow out of the joy of what God has done. A legitimate thing, not a driven thing, not a pressure to build a kingdom, not a glorious missionary endeavor, although part of that is fine. So, good question. I don't really know. We're here, we had a winter, we're just coming out of a winter rental in Rye, just on Rye Beach, which has been nice. The weather has picked up a little later than I hoped it would. But now it's nice. But we're just there till the end of May. And then, as some of you probably remember, we have a house just around the corner from here in the north end of Dover on Shawnee Lane. That house is on the market now. That's a prayer request. We're praying it sells. But we'll probably move back there until it does. So we'll be there probably from the 1st of June. And then we'll just see. I think God has kind of laid in our hearts, and it remains to be seen whether this really is God. You know, God sometimes gives you a sense of what you get excited about something, or you feel like God may have this, and then you ask him about it, and there's this period of kind of waiting where it hasn't come through yet. You're kind of testing, but you still ask him. So we feel like we should sell the place and then try and get into a multi-family, because that represents a good way for us to be here. We don't have to pay the mortgage because the other units in the facility would. And then we could rent it out while we're gone, and we could make more money that way. So anyway, that's kind of the situation we're thinking about and praying about.
The sort of things that we're focusing our time on now are more like foundations in order to help us better when we go back. Now that we sort of have an idea of what it might look like to live there,
yeah.
We can more establish some better foundations to help us next time we go back.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're at. We're hoping to visit in November.
Yeah. Yeah, we're hoping to visit. Yeah. 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 Yes.
Look, I've noticed with missionaries that God puts a very specific love in their heart for a very specific nation or region. Do you have that? Or so what is the region that?
Yeah. What I'm kind of living with that is it's not there. It's kind of this. It's called the Khalij, which is the Arabian Peninsula. So it's Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, UAE, Bahrain, Qatar, Oman, and Yemen. So it's those countries, I would say. Those countries are, it's kind of like there really are no believers locally, as in people who live and have grown up there, who follow Jesus and love Jesus as the Son of God. Muslims love Jesus, but not as the Son of God. They love him as a prophet, which is both good and bad. So, yeah. Yeah, good question. Yeah. So there's a fairly significant expat population, and lots of those are Christians. So they would get together in the church in the city we were in, about 200, maybe it was 500,000 people or 250,000 people. So I think it's about 500,000 people in the city we were in, and there were probably a handful of expat Christian churches where, you know, the Americans or the Europeans, but those types of people, Westerners, get together on Sundays. And it's a church. Friday's a holy day. So, Friday, Saturday, yeah. So they would do that. And that would be just an expat community, essentially. And then, you know, Indians would often get together, the believers would get together, and Sri Lankans. Because that part of the world is a melting pot for other nationalities to come, because there's so much opportunity for work. Lots of people come there to make money. Lots of migrant workers come to be abused and have no money. So there's So there's that that's open that you could do if you wanted to go to be a part of an expat church. But for us at the time, we were with a group of people, a small team of people, and we just got together ourselves on the Friday morning in our homes and prayed and, you know. That's an interesting question. Now, in the UAE, which is where we were in the latter portion of our stay, it's enshrined in their constitution that you can express your religion, which they would say Christianity is a religion. You can express that as long as it doesn't disrupt the public peace. So even though it's in some ways it's quite a traditionally Islamic state, they've built within it some kind of way of expats being there and continue to live the life that expats want to live. So, yeah, we wouldn't publicize it that we were meeting because, we were intentionally there to see people come to faith. Now, there are some people who see that as a threat. I don't personally see it as a threat to them. I think they only have to gain. But some people see that as a threat. So, we wouldn't broadcast it. We wouldn't publicize it. We would keep it on the down low. But it's unsure as to whether we really would have had an issue about that or not. But we just felt like we should just be more cautious.
The expat churches, it was they were advertised and they had websites and things like that. However, it's highly, highly, highly unlikely that a local person would ever walk in there because of because of the shame, basically. Even if they felt drawn, it's very unlikely. And culturally, the church services look like you would see a church service here in the States, and it's just so far from what they know that they say, you know, look, there's men and women together, and the women are wearing pants, and they all wear their shoes into the building, you know, because they take off their shoes when they go into the mosque. It's disrespectful to wear their shoes in, and there's just so many things that are so, and women cover their heads there. So having women uncovered and all that sort of thing, it's just too far removed from what they know and understand for them to even have any desire to. And that's why we felt like we wanted to do something smaller and ultimately, hopefully, something more culturally relevant.
Yeah. Yes, Paul.
So, Mark, if you were like in the UAE, you met a friend, say, on the job, and went to like a tea house or something like that, sat down.
Yeah.
And if your conversation led to things of the faith, and you laid out the basic premises of the gospel, would you be at risk for doing that in that setting?
No, probably not. Where we were, probably not. Some of that might depend on how I did it.
Conversationally.
If I was to do it, you know, sensitively saying, you know, this is what I believe is true, then no, I don't think so. I mean, he would reject it. The person would probably reject it. Or they might not. I don't know. They might be fine with him becoming a believer. But it's kind of tied up. The security aspect of it, in terms of our physical security, is kind of caught up in what we say about what they believe. Like if I go in and insult Muhammad, you know, the prophet, not cool. So that's kind of stupid. But so I'll try not to do that. It's a good question. You know, yeah. I mean, where we were was, in some ways, it was kind of, actually, to be honest, it was safer than here. Not right here. This is a very safe library. I feel fine here. But in, you know, as a culture in the UAE, it's very, very safe. Very. I mean, people, you know, people say, well, I say to someone, you know, we went to the Middle East and, ISIS, it's very dangerous. How can you take your family there? And yeah, you know, there were parts of the Middle East which are very dangerous. And indeed, why would I take my family there? But where we were was not like that at all. There was one instance of just one instance of a murder in Abu Dhabi, which is the capital of the UAE, and everyone was just shocked because this never happens. It never happens there because they have such a value on community and individual shame and the sense of we live for our community. The idea of being an individual and having individual rights outside of the community is like, oh, it doesn't exist in their worldview. So Eastern culture is very different from Western culture. So because of that sense of preserving the community and preserving communal honor, the idea of coming in and killing someone, I mean, you just wouldn't, you'd never do it because of the shame that it would associate, that you'd bring upon yourself and your family, and your name would be in disrepute. So there's very little crime there. So yeah, it's hard sometimes. The media, whatever. There are parts of the Middle East which are real tough, and the media will talk about those parts. But I had this really interesting conversation with a Syrian. I was having some shisha, which is hookah. There's one of those pipes where it's got burning coals. Yeah, it's great. He said he was from Syria, and obviously, you know, the situation in Syria at the moment is really dire. So I said, do you have family in Syria? Yeah, I'm really sorry. It must be really tough for you. But he said, yeah, you know, there are lots of Syria is really beautiful, and lots of Syria is unaffected by this, what's going on. And he showed me a picture of his hometown, the downtown part of it, and it was just beautiful, you know, beautiful architecture, nice and green. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, my whole worldview about this part of the world and this country is dominated by what I hear on the media. And I don't think those things are unreal. I don't think they're reporting lies, but I guess we're kind of pivoted over to something of a different topic here. But so much of our thoughts are dominated by what we hear. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot more that's going on and a lot more to those nations and those peoples than the things we kind of hear about every day. So I wouldn't say we were really in much danger at all. If we were very trying to point the finger at Islam and Muslims as specifically being evil, an evil group of people who are destined for hell, then that would not have been a wise way of entering the culture. I think an unbiblical way. I don't think Jesus is pleased with that. Oh wow. So yeah, but I mean, we felt all along, we felt and we still feel very strongly that, you know, we're called to love these people, to demonstrate the love of Jesus to them. Like, you know, Jesus came down, he became human, he reconciled himself with us in terms of his flesh, he gave up his standing, you know, with the Father. He came to us, and he didn't point the finger. He came to love. And yeah, he called some things out, but he called some things out in religious people, not people who are poor, who are hungry, who are humble. He always had a problem with the religious. So, you know, we just felt very much that God would have us come and love them, try and understand them, try and see where they're coming from. And we know that in that place that God meets them, the gospel meets them in profound ways, but it doesn't help if we point the finger and say your prophet is useless, your Quran is a book of lies. It's just not going to, those things are kind of true, but it's not going to help you by saying them, because you're just going to cause offense. I mean, when does that ever good? So
potentially, if you saw lots of fruit also, that could cause an issue, but that has never happened in the Gulf. But I mean, there may be a few people here or there scattered throughout the Gulf that do know Jesus, but they're very few and far between. And potentially, if there was something that, you know, big and noticeable, that I think the government might.
100 people coming to your house to hear more.
Yeah, right. quite possibly.
Right.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right.
And potentially, right. I think in those countries, probably the worst case scenario is you get kicked out of the country.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Kind of what we felt like we were dealing with, based on what you know from others.
Yeah.
But if we got kicked out of the country for fruitfulness, we would be happy to go.
Sure enough. Yeah. Good question. So we went out with an agency called, well, we really felt like God spoke to us about the church. You know, traditionally there's been this thing that's happened where when someone feels called to the nations, they get farmed out to a missions agency, and the missions agency tends to, you know, take care of lots of things. And the person will come back and report to the church and things like that. There is a relationship that exists between the person and the church, but primarily God's agent for cross-cultural mission, historically, in most recent years, is missions agency. Phoebe and I have really not really felt like God's spoken that to us. So we actually partnered with a missions agency and at the time, but we really felt like God, the prototype of scripture we felt was a mobilized missional church. Like you guys, and that God's mission springs out of His church, and we really, to say it starkly, we don't really see that the missions agency biblically can exist, but it does, so we deal with that graciously. But anyway, we really, and our church is New Frontiers. We really feel God has spoken to us about the nations, put it on our hearts. So we went with our church, kind of seconded to the missions agency, but when we go again, inshallah, it'll just be with our church, because we really feel like God's using us to recover something of His original intention for the mobilized church, which is, you know, we live for the glory of God, for His kingdom purposes right here and all the way across the world, as much as He calls us to. And that involves making mistakes, it involves some messiness, but we're the people of God, and that's how His kingdom grows. So yeah, we were seconded originally, but now we feel pretty clearly, and our, you know, along with our leaders, that the time has come for just us to be sent just through our church. Yeah.
What extra challenges does that bring?
What do you mean, in terms of not working with an agency? None. good question. I don't want to despise your question. So if I came across like that, then I'm sorry.
Our church is still learning how to send people, so growing pains, really, I think, is probably the biggest thing. They're eager to learn how to send people, how to support people who are living overseas. But
yeah.
Haven't really, it's just kind of getting started.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest
thing. We have some people who've been overseas and things like that, so not complete babies, but being cross-cultural just has a way of making a kid out of you. I mean, there's no one's ever an expert about these things, because there's just so many unforeseen things that happen when you're talking about, you know, making such a move. The thing we realized, though, and that this is why we're intentionally just wanting to go with our church, is like the biggest issue in terms of doing this is values. Like, what do we believe about our faith? And we realized that in working with an agency, oh goodness, I've overrun. It potentially is difficult, because you have then potentially a conflict of values. Well, we all say we're Christians, but underneath that, what do we believe about grace? What do we believe about law? What do we believe about the Holy Spirit? How do we expect the Holy Spirit to move? Like, we all carry our thoughts about these things. And we realize that, you know, we have some thoughts that we feel are from God about those things. And potentially those from the agency don't think that. So, well, they may be convicted about what they're convicted about, but we're convicted about what we're convicted about. So we need to go with those, build with people who have the same values. So that's really why we're just going to go with our, you know, with our church primarily, is because we build together. We know what we believe. We feel like God's spoken to us together. We're committed to each other and working together, building together. So yeah, it's a good question. Good question, sorry. Cool.
We should conclude. Thank you very much, Mark, and Peter. Appreciate
Thank you.
Your comments. There will be a second offering, as you know, for the Davenport family in the services.